This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. This is episode 134 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hey, David. Well, once again, we're broadcasting another video episode live on Blab. And like the last time we did this, the audio will be released in the podcast feed for you that are listening later. But right now we're on live. We hope to have an audience join us and they can carry on a conversation in the chat room, and they can also ask us questions. David, we've got a guest with us this episode. You want to do the introductions?
I'd like to introduce Tim Trott. Tim has been on the show multiple times and is a serious contributor to the show. Welcome aboard. And he's can be found on Twitter at Droner's Guide.
That is correct.
Tim from Southern Helicam, that's one of your ventures, and you've also been kind of getting into the training arena when it comes to unmanned vehicles lately, haven't you?
Yeah, my new identity is the drone professor.
Very good. All right, well, why don't we get started? David, you want to kick this off?
Sure. We'll do this with a discussion of the microdrone amendment to H.R. 4441. The FAA Reauthorization Act before Congress. There was some changes made. We know that we have till the end of March before the funding for the FAA runs out. But there was an amendment to the 441 introduced by Congressman Rodney Davis, and it's a microdrone amendment. And it seeks to create a micro UAS classification.
That's right. And Tim, we'll ask you maybe to talk about some of the features of this, but this is kind of what I think a lot of us have been hoping for, was that there would be created a micro drone category, if you will, something that's small enough such that, well, many people feel that regulation, a lot of that sort of thing would be unnecessary, even potentially for commercial use. And that's kind of what this amendment does, isn't it, Tim?
Yeah, it seems to. In fact, it parallels the original NPRM in many ways, with some notable exceptions. I'm looking at page 55 of the NPRM, and one of the categories says airspace limitations, and that is not in this new amendment. And also, it's consistent in that it has applicant would self-qualify. There's no knowledge test required. All of those are consistent. And operating within 5 miles of an airport. In the NPRM, it said no. But in the 4441, it says, yes, you can with permission, just like the small UAS. So this is a nice improvement.
Now, a micro drone is defined here as something weighing 4.4 pounds or less, which is around 2 kilograms. And the kinds of requirements that we see proposed by the FAA for commercial operation are really not in effect here. We see that there's no airman certification requirements, no aeronautical knowledge test. There's no age requirement, no airworthiness certification requirements, but you still have to register under the existing FAA UAS registration process. So that kind of opens it up.
I'm looking through here. I can't determine if an N number is required or not, or just registration. I would assume that would be a good idea to have, but I don't see it in there.
it's kind of hard to tell. There are some requirements for some flight requirements for this proposed micro drone category. You mentioned there's five of them. Flight below 400 feet, no faster than 40 knots. It has to fly within visual line of sight, daylight hours only.
Daylight hours only, yeah, I was going to mention that.
Yes, yes. And you talked about the 5 mile issue around around airports. So I don't know, David, I think this is pretty encouraging. I mean, this is kind of what we were hoping to see, don't you think?
Agreed. I mean, it's just unfortunate it's being amended to the FAA. We don't know what's going to happen with the FAA air regulations. And there's a whole chance that it might get thrown out completely. But we've wanted a micro regulation because there are people who are going to just operate small UAVs, like my tiny little quadcopter. I don't know. I'm a little worried that just throwing it in as an amendment to this is going to get a washout later.
It's kind of hard to predict what's going to happen. Go ahead, Tim.
As a backup, we've got 4432, which came out last week, which is actually is very nice as well. I mean, there are a lot of good things in that as well. And then there was the one from last. There's a Senate 1314. So a lot of things going in pretty much the same direction. And the direction is nice. With your comment about the micros, I was just noticing here that the 4.4 pounds, the most popular DJI is the Phantom 2 and the Phantom 3. I have the Phantom 2. That's 2.5 pounds or 1,160 grams. The Phantom 3, the bigger, the later one is 2.8, 1280. So 1280 grams. So both of these qualify, and they basically the free pass under the micro.
Right, right. This would allow, if this goes through, this would allow, like you say, Tim, the largest number of hobbyist or light commercial drones that are sold out there these days. The things like the DJI drones and the 3D robotics and others like that would fit under this category. So this would exempt a lot of hardware, if you will. A lot of unmanned aircraft, if you will, from the kinds of regulations we were sort of expecting to see come out of the FAA. Of course, we're still waiting for the NPRM, right? We're still waiting for the final rules to take place or to be issued by the FAA, or at least another iteration of it. I guess we're hopeful that it's sometime this year.
I have some news in that regard. As of 2:30 or 2:12 afternoon, an email I got from in the FAA reads as, quote, our UAS Air Sports feed just checked with contacts, and as of today, it still plans to publish the final rule for the NPRM 14 CFR 107 on or about June 17th. The expectation is that all required interagency and interdepartmental coordination will be completed by day. Hate to counter my good friend John Ruprecht, but that's what this is now. The unexpected delays can arise, but as of now, things are on track for June as of today.
Hmm. Oh, that's very encouraging. Very good. Very good.
That is very encouraging. Very hopeful.
Tim, just switching subjects a little bit. Tim, you attended the International Flight School Operations Conference, I guess, in Orlando last week, didn't you? And you were on a panel.
I was on a drone panel, and there were several excellent speakers on that panel, and I was probably the smallest in that group, but it was a very worthwhile conference. It's the Flight School Association of North America, which I'm now proud to say I'm now a member.
The topic of drones, I kind of imagine, was a new one for that organization. I mean, I would imagine they're normally talking about flight training for manned aircraft. So it was kind of interesting that, they recognize the need to have a serious discussion about training for unmanned aircraft as well. What kind of sense did you get from the participants?
A number of the flight schools are actually conducting what amounts to training for drone operators, or at least they're doing the ground school basics and the things that we had up to this point thought were going, before the micro ruling, we thought were going to be a part of the requirement. So they're adapting very well. Initially, I think some of the flight schools saw the drone boom as being something negative, but I did not sense that at all. In fact, many of the flight school operators actually are starting separate UAV classes that were flying one around the conference center. And it was a very positive atmosphere all the way around. It was one drone company that were there. I wish I could the name escapes me right now. I apologize to them, but they were in attendance. Had a Phantom 3, had an Inspire on display, and so it was very positive in that regard.
So you didn't run across too much, I'll call it anti-drone kind of feelings on the part of the manned aircraft crowd?
None was evidence. None was in evidence. I was pleasantly surprised. I was anticipating that there might be, you know, some feeling that we've known is among the airline pilots, but none of that was in evidence. It was actually very positive. The talk that I gave kind of, I think, encapsulated the attitude that a lot of them have taken. My presentation was that in the past there were inspiration. Now there were many people through history that have outlined, starting with Lindbergh, going through up to Sky King, whom I happen to be a personal friend of, and everybody's saying, well, you ought to bring back Sky King because the number of people getting into aviation and pilot school is diminishing. And I pointed out that the next inspiration is the drones. You're getting people interested, and that's the path that they'll be taking. And a lot of people saw that as being a thought. So here we go. This is the next inspiration. Drones are the next Sky King.
I guess that's probably true. So you thought it was a pretty positive experience, it sounds like.
Yes.
All right. Well, David, you know, we were talking last week about the about lawsuits involving unmanned aircraft, including the Taylor lawsuit challenging the FAA's ability to require drone registration. But we see in the news in a Forbes article that someone else is also thinking along those lines.
Yeah, Tech Freedom is a District of Columbia think tank. And they're filed a suit against D.C. Court of Common Appeals to overturn the registration requirement. Tech Freedom says the FAA action violates Section 336 of a 2012 FAA authorization law prohibiting the FAA from promulgating any rule or regulation regarding model aircraft. So they're taking the same. So we're having multiple lawsuits now against the same 336 and that. The FAA, while regulating drones, and it rolled in model aircraft, and that's against their charter.
We also see, according to the article, that the lawsuit also claims that the FAA did not provide the public with notice of a new regulation and an opportunity to comment on it. And they said that was arbitrary, capricious, and an abuse of discretion. I don't think the FAA considers the registration requirement as a regulation per se, which I think needs to have a period for public comment and all that. Although I think the FAA can implement rules if they, you know, deem them to be a safety issue, which maybe that's the logic they've used here.
And that would that would be definitely the answer that they would use would be. Yep. It's a safety regulation. We needed to register all of these drones. I mean, we have to admit that it was done in within 30 days. The recommendations and setup and everything was done within a very timely fashion. And we know how long it's taken for them to study the comments on the notice of NRPM. So clearly, they're going to pull the safety card on this one.
Yeah.
I think they probably panicked a little bit and said, holy cow, Christmas is coming. There's going to be a million of these things. What do we do? And so they just did what they figured they had to at least get a start to get a handle on it. I'm not sure how effective it was because how many of them are out there? And they are registered, only 300,000. They're about the 300,000. But, hey, that's about how many were sold last year.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen an update on that number, that 300,000, in a few weeks. But certainly an awful lot of folks did register under the new FAA rule.
There are more drone operators registered than there are aircraft registered at this point. So the scale is...
Yeah. All right. Well, as a follow-up on another action that we saw, this came from our listener, Ken. This is from dronelife.com. New Jersey drone shooter pleads guilty. Well, if you'll recall maybe that in September 2014, this actually goes back a while, this guy, Russell Percenti, he shot down a drone that was flying near his property. The drone owner said that he was just simply taking aerial photos of a friend's home that was under some kind of construction, if I recall that correctly. But the drone owner retrieved his damaged drone and called the police, who charged the shooter with criminal mischief and possession of a weapon for unlawful purposes. He has pled guilty, apparently, to that charge. But this relates back to what we were talking about last week, I think, David, about, you know, who owns the airspace, who regulates the airspace. If your neighbor's drone flies over your backyard, you know, is that something that you can take action on? Or is that something that is not in... not something that you can do anything about, that the FAA, the federal government, regulates the airspace.
It's tough, you know. From blades of grass to sky is going to be a argument for a long time. In this case, we clearly have a issue where the police determined that it was an unsafe. The guy shooting at it was unsafe, not necessarily a violation of his airspace, kind of thing. And we know that it is a federal law to shoot down an aircraft, and a drone is considered an aircraft. So they took the proper stance, which was probably firing a firearm and not necessarily in a safe manner.
Yeah.
Did you read about the case in Hawaii in a I think it was a national or state park out there. Did you see that one?
No.
There was somebody flying a drone in the state park, and the officer ordered him to stop, the operator to stop, and he kept running. So they hit him with a taser, and it went to court. And the court says that the ranger was well within his rights to use the taser to make the person stop.
Yeah.
And we just lost.
We did. Maybe David will come back in. But yeah, this was at Hawaii Volcanoes National Park.
Exactly.
Right. And the judge in this case fined this individual $1,000 and banned him from that park for 1 year. Interestingly, we have another listener, Jeffrey, who's on our listener team on Slack. He said that there's been a hazards TFR over Volcanoes National Park for several years, actually, and that states that only relief aircraft operations under direction of National Park Service are authorized in the airspace at and below 4,000 feet. And Jeffrey tells us this is mainly due to the gas, steam, and ash plume that rises out of the vent of this crater, which is obviously a hazard to aviation. It's more than just, you know, a guy flying in a national park, which we all know is not allowed. This is actually subject to a TFR.
Well, another thing too is when you've got hot plumes like that, what does that do to lift? And a lot of drone operators are not aware of the fact that with the hot air is thinner, and so you have the hazard of losing control.
Yeah, very, very dangerous, situation. So, I think, you need to look at what TFRs, you need to look at, you know, where you're flying and, what kind of restrictions that may be in effect there. It's not just a matter of, you know, being able to fly your hobby drone anywhere you'd like to for a variety of different kinds of safety reasons.
that brings up my concern about the wide open door is 4440 not requiring any education. I think that may be going in the wrong direction. A lot of people might say that's wonderful, no education required, but little things like, you know, lift over hot air, these are some things that need to be known.
Yeah.
And airspace and all the rest of it. I have a vested interest in that since I'm teaching those things.
But still, I think it's an entirely valid point, Tim, that, I mean, there's some basic awareness that I think operators need to have. I mean, you know, if you're going anything higher than the trees in your backyard, you know, I think you need to be aware of some basic airmanship, some basic, you know, flight considerations, some basic safety considerations, you know, if nothing else. So, yeah, I hope they're in there.
Reading some of the online forums, you see some of the things. The things that I see online forums are really downright scary.
Yeah, I bet. Maybe we can mention just really quickly. Maybe make it as our video of the week is the Power Egg. This is a video that you sent. This is something from, I guess, Power Vision, and it, when you look at it, it looks like a pretty large egg. But Tim, that's not all it is.
No, it's got a 360 camera in it and the whole thing. I don't know how they make the mechanics of the little folding up things, but it is very intriguing.
It's very intriguing, and what this thing does is it sort of transforms itself. It opens up the arms, the propellers, the rotors come out, the legs fold out, I don't think it's available quite yet. But the video is kind of fun. We'll put that in the show notes at the UAVDigest.com. I see David's back with us.
Sorry.
David. You still there?
David's back. Welcome back.
All right. Well, I think we're getting close to wrapping it up. Tim, yeah, as David mentioned, you're a great contributor to the show, but also to you know, kind of unmanned vehicles in general, the hobby, the industry. Maybe we'll just give you the floor for a minute, and you can tell our listeners and our watchers some of the things that you do and where they can find you online.
Well, my latest venture is the drone professor, and I go in that direction because public safety under the current 334 is self-certifying. So the situation is you've got people in search and rescue and everything else like that, not required to have a pilot's license. Not required. The pilots that are employed by sheriff's office and things like that have much bigger things to do, and they're too expensive based on drones, effectively. So I decided to fill the need, and I went to the certification for instructors for the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and I'm now engaged in setting up classes for teaching law enforcement how to the basic rules of the road, the basic aviation things, the consideration indications, maintenance, battery operation, flight planning, and responding to the FAA advisory to law enforcement to drone complaints. And I've also worked into that. Florida's got their own little statute that has to do with privacy and surveillance and lawsuits. And so that's 934.5. And so I'm integrating that into the course too. So that's what we're doing now.
All right. Fantastic. That's great to hear. David, anything you want to add before we, since you're back, before we close up?
No, I want to apologize. I haven't been feeling well today, so this is not my best night for a blab episode.
Well, thanks for pressing onward nonetheless. So this has been episode 134 of the UAV Digest. Normally, we're an audio-only digest. You can find us at, theuavdigest.com. You can find show notes there, or you can just visit theuavdigest.com/134 for episode 134. Of course, you can find us all over social media. David, you want to tell folks where they can find us?
You can follow us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook at facebook.com/theUAVDigest. And you can get some swag at our Cafe Press store. Or if you'd like, you can support the show at Patreon. Links to those are on our homepage, theuavdigest.com. So with that, I guess we'll say have a good week, everyone. This is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
Thanks for listening.